Blog Talk Radio.
Host Merle Exit. Okay, what was it? It's a warm and cloudy and a day here in New York City. Probably muggy, I don't know yet. I haven't gone out. But I'm sitting in my house doing the show. That's what's important. So, what's happening? Okay, well, I went to Quincy, Massachusetts, which is the birthplace of two of our presidents, John Adams and John Quincy Adams, his son. And apparently it's the only city in the United States that boasts having the birthplace of two presidents. Let alone, also, there's John Hancock was born there, which is probably why there's a big street, Hancock Street is there, and a lot of Adams Street, you know, plenty of that there in the town in Quincy. And also the first Howard Johnson's, yes, and the first Dunkin' Donuts. As a matter of fact, the Dunkin' Donuts is like it's still the recreation of the, well, not the recreation. I think I'm sure they had to fix it up a bit. But if you go in there and there's a corner that has what it looked like in the 1950s when they first, you know, opened it up. And, another bunch of historical things, or hysterical things too. So, one great way to tour the history of Quincy is through the National Parks Department, and I'm going to have Deputy Superintendent Carolyn Kynes. Take us on the tour. Then there's a definite array of cuisines in Quincy, and Jimmy Liang, who's the owner of a company called Fuji Group, will talk about his restaurants, and including the one that I dined at called Fuji's. And lastly, are you ready for a different weight loss program? Okay. Personal Trainer Food is the program that provides the food while you're cutting out the bad carbs. Okay. And owner or creator of the cuisine, Mike Starks, will tell all. So, okay, we are now going to talk about some history. Hello, Carolyn.
Good morning or afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, tell us, it's interesting that if you go to parks departments, these national parks departments, you can get great tours for low prices.
That's correct. Yes, I am with the National Park Service, and my particular park is Adams National Historical Park in Quincy, Massachusetts. But you're correct. If you go to the National Park Service website, which consists of almost 400 national parks within the national park system, there are a variety of opportunities and experiences available for the visitor, both online and in person. The National Park Service consists of natural areas such as Yellowstone or Yosemite and Grand Canyon, the ones that many of our audience is probably familiar with. But there are also historical sites like the one that I work at, Adams National Historical Park. There are Civil War sites such as Gettysburg, and cultural sites such as St. Gaudens National Historical Park up in Vermont. So there's the National Park Service really reflects the history and development experiences of the people of the United States and environmental considerations as well, the geographic landscapes and cultural landscapes. Our particular park, as you may have pointed out, is the story of four generations of the Adams family, including Presidents John Adams and John Quincy Adams and their first ladies, Abigail Adams and Louisa Catherine Adams. And you're right, it's a very good deal. The Park Service's goal is to provide opportunities for all visitors, and because of that, the prices reflect that desire. For example,
so how much does it cost, and what do you get to see?
At our park, our price is $5 per person per tour, but we have a variety of passes that you can get, including the National Park Service Pass, that it will allow you access to all national parks within the systems, and that's the entrance fee. But for our particular park, it's $5. Children 16 and under are free, and that buys you, if you will, an experience that includes going to our visitor center in the center of Quincy at 1250 Hancock Street. And we have our film there that begins your experience. And it's a 26-minute film that really presents the visitor with an overall overview of the four generations of the Adamses that lived in the home and experienced this place and their contributions to the country, whether they be literary, historical, political. So the orientation begins at the visitor center. There's also a bookstore at the visitor center as well. After that, you board our trolley. It's a free trolley shuttle service that will bring you from the visitor center to our first of three historic homes, the first two actually, the John Adams and John Quincy Adams birthplaces. They're two historical saltbox homes that are in the original location. They are the original homes of where John Adams, our second president, was born. And then when he and his wife Abigail Smith were married, they moved to the house about 50 yards away. That today is called the John Quincy Adams birthplace. Of course, that's where our second president was born, as well as their other children. It's where Abigail and John experienced their and lived the first 10 years of their marriage. And then with the beginning events of the Revolutionary War, John Adams was elected to go to Philadelphia to serve in the Second Continental Congress, working toward declaring American independence. And this would begin a 10-year period where their lives would be apart. John Adams in Philadelphia, Abigail back on the farm, taking care of the farm, raising the children, educating them, and managing the family's finances. John Adams would come back about two times during that period for two short visits of about 3 months and 6 months. And then he would be assigned to work on the Treaty of Paris to end the Revolutionary War and follow that with an appointment as our first minister plenipotentiary, or ambassador, if you will, to England. Finally, in 1784, Abigail would join him. They would live in both Paris and England for about 4 years, return back to the United States, and move into what today is called the Old House at Peacefield, and that's where your next trolley stop is. And that house was home to four generations of the Adams family, including John and Abigail. From there, you are escorted back to the visitor center on the trolley. So your $5 will buy you a historical house tour, the orientation film, and about a three-hour journey through the history and development of the United States through the experiences and lives and views of the Adams family. There's about 11.
What about the church?
The United First Parish Church.
Yes. Is that part of it?
That is today where both presidents and first ladies are entombed in the Adams family crypts.
Mm-hmm.
It's a private church. It's an operating church, an active church. We work in partnership, but it is not under the care of the National Park Service. But they run a very successful tour program, providing interpretive tours to the Adams family crypt and talking about the experience of the Adamses and the importance and role that religion had in their lives.
Okay, so that's not a part of the tour, but in terms of its location, if you're getting off the trolley, is it nearby? Is it where you can walk to?
Yes, it's adjacent to the visitor center. You just go out of the visitor center, and it's just a short walk. When I say it's not a part of the tour, it's not a part of the National Park Service tour, but it is a part of a full experience from the birth of the presidents to their final resting place. So it is a part of the experience. And across the street from the church is the historic Hancock Cemetery, where both John and Abigail were buried before the crypt was built through the efforts of his son, John Quincy Adams. And then their bodies were transferred from the Hancock Cemetery to the crypt. And later on, that's where John Quincy and Louisa Catherine would find their final resting place. But the historic cemetery is also a wonderful resource within the city of Quincy, and it actually is where Henry Adams, the first of the Adamses to immigrate from Europe to the United States, from England to the United States in 1636, and he's buried there. So that's the first Adams to step foot of this family in the New World. So it's a wonderful little historic cemetery.
Wow, that's a nice on a nice day. It's a great tour. It's on a nice day.
Even on a rainy day, it's a nice tour.
On a day when it was 92 degrees, it wasn't as wonderful.
Nor for the guides, but we still persevere and try to share as much as we can with our visitors. You're right. The houses are not air conditioned. You're stepping back to the 18th century.
Right. But there are, they do have fans in there. I just want to let you know.
Yes, we're very good at blowing hot air.
Yeah. Well, I just want to make it clear to my listeners, this is the not the Adams family, the creepy people that just on the television. This is, you may want to, in case you're thinking it might be them, look it up.
And I'm sure the Adams family with the two D's would not define themselves as creepy. However, they do share a similar last name, and we have had our visitors who have a sense of humor who come to the door snapping their fingers. So we try to maintain our sense of humor as well.
Okay. I also wanted to talk about this whole experience regarding the reenactment of the Declaration of Independence.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is done every July 4th?
Yes. John Adams and Abigail, but John Adams in particular, with the 56 delegates at the Second Continental Congress, he was critical in his role in and his contributions to moving the 13 colonies from 13 disparate colonies to one independent nation, 13 separate states, but one nation, in working on the Declaration of Independence and then finally adopting Richard Henry Lee's resolution that these united colonies are and off right ought to be free and independent states. John Adams was on board with that as well, and that would happen on July 2nd of 1776, and then, of course, they would agree on that resolution on July 4th, and that's when we, in fact, celebrate the adoption of the Declaration of Independence. It is an important piece of history. It's the beginning of our nation. John Adams was a critical player. Abigail, through her letter writing and experiences back here, was also a critical player, representing the patriot on the home front, and giving John and, in fact, the rest of Congress, the Continental Congress, her experiences through her letters on what was happening back here in Massachusetts during the Revolutionary War, her feelings on the role and the voice of women as we form this new government, challenging John Adams to remember the ladies in the new code of laws, which it will be necessary for them to to create. So it is an important piece of history, and one that we try to represent here at the site. So as a nod to that that story, we every year on July 4th do a reenactment of the events of the Second Continental Congress as they move to declare independence. And it's a fully engaging, participatory experience for all of our visitors. They take on the role of the delegates who were members of the Continental Congress, and we provide some general information to them on note cards, on some of the points and views of the individual delegates from the 13 colonies. And the audience, John Hancock, who is a reenactor, will facilitate this program and guide people and the delegates through the process of working on the issues surrounding the movement to American independence. And it really is a nod to the experiences and intelligence of our audience, because they take over. They embrace their roles. They take them serious, no matter if somebody's from the South or the North and they find themselves in a different region during the Continental Congress. They're serious. And you could be from Massachusetts but wind up in South Carolina defending slavery. And it's a wonderful experience for everybody to examine, discuss, and debate all of the issues that were so important as we debated American independence. The program lasts about 1.5 hours. At the end of the program, at the conclusion, the delegates will take their vote, yay or nay, for the vote for independence. And we have a celebration. Following that Declaration of Independence, we go outside and we stand in the shadow of John Adams's home, and there's a public reading of the Declaration of Independence by all the members of the audience, and it's quite a moving experience for people, as I hope that you experienced as well.
Oh, yes.
And after that, we celebrate with events, activities, and games for children that would have been played and shared in the 18th century. We do candle rolling, doll making. We have the game of hoops and game of graces. So it's a full day event. And in addition to that, we're conducting our Independence Day tours through the historic homes.
Oh, right. Yeah, I saw that going on. Like someone was saying, who's on the going on this tour? You know, because I'm going. Oh, we're sitting outside over here, okay? Because things got to move. And there was. Oh, they also did something on the lawn.
We follow that with that. These activities take place all day, but the Continental Congress. And again, each year we fool around with different times, but that usually, as I said, ends about 3 o'clock or so, 2:30. And then we follow that with a play that has been a tradition at our site, and it's called Adams and Jefferson. And it's a dialogue, the play is a discussion and a theatrical performance bringing to life the letters shared between John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, and Abigail Adams, all through their relationship, the trials, the tribulations, and their friendship. And we have three outstanding actors. Two of them, the person who portrays Thomas Jefferson, Bill Barker, and then Abigail Schumann, who portrays Abigail Adams, are from Colonial Williamsburg. They're professionals that work down there year-round but provide opportunities all over the country and performances. And we also have Sam Goodyear, who portrays John Adams, and he's also a professional actor. So these three individuals visit us each year on July 4th, and they perform this wonderful stage play of the letters of Abigail, John, and Thomas Jefferson. And it's a very moving experience with the backdrop of the old house with John Adams and Abigail shared for 26 years in retirement, and then 8 years before that, their lives in public service. So it's a wonderful backdrop to this story. And these three actors bring you through when they first met, the Revolutionary War, John Adams's presidency and his fallout with Thomas Jefferson, and then their renewed friendship during their last years from 1814 to 1826 when they reconciled and wrote letters between one another, over 500 of them, sharing everything and anything and everything. So that is really nice, a nice capstone to the whole experience. We have, as I was saying earlier, conducted tours, games and activities, and then a theatrical performance, the Arts in the Park, if you will, all
right.
Celebrating July 4th with a backdrop of fireworks going off. You know, you can hear them around the community and in Boston. So it's a very meaningful day.
Well, what's also even more interesting about the community about Quincy is the biggest big celebrations the night before with the fireworks.
The parade and fireworks, that's right. Yep, the city of Quincy celebrates as well as us. There's parades actually all over and celebrations, whether it's a backyard barbecue or a parade down in Squatom Point. And the fireworks at Merrimont at a local park. So there's July 4th is a celebration not only in Quincy but throughout the country.
It's one of those occasions that
you can find everybody or most people who are celebrating at least some aspect of our nation's history and a nod to our founding fathers and the work that they did.
Let me ask you a question. I'm not sure where I read this. When they said the way to celebrate, and it said bonfires. Who said that? Or where did I see that?
I don't know where you saw it, but I alluded to earlier. Richard Henry Lee proposed the resolution for the United Colonies to be free and independent states. And that was on July 2nd. The next day, John Adams wrote a letter to Abigail about this monumental occasion. And he wrote to her that this day in history, from coast to coast in years future, not a direct quote, but it will be celebrated with bonfires and parades. He didn't say barbecues, but the same spirit,
right.
You know, picnics and bonfires. And illumination. So you probably have at least heard, or you're alluding to his letter that he wrote to Abigail, because the day of July 2nd, when they agreed that on Lee's resolution, he thought would be celebrated. But in fact, we celebrate July 4th when the Declaration of Independence was adopted as our Day of Independence. So he was off by 2 days.
Well, the reason I was kind of wondering why I was in the area called Housneck, and they had a big bonfire on the beach, and I thought, well, I guess they just want to celebrate, but now
there's
it makes sense.
There's a historical meaning to that, yeah.
Yes. Because that looks like the place to be on the evening of July 3rd in terms of
July 2nd.
No, actually, it was on the 3rd that I saw this.
Okay. Well, as I said, July 2nd, 3rd, 4th. It's a weekend of celebration and activity, so you can find a bonfire in almost any town in the United States.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a weekend, even if it's during the week.
That's right.
As this turned out to be.
Uh-huh.
But I think I got what I was getting was I went, oh, well, the weekend's coming up. Let's continue. So what I was seeing was there was like a list of where else, you know, in that around the area that fireworks were going to be going every night, you know, different places.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty cool. So on average, I mean, not on average. Oh, you know what I wanted? I wanted to also comment about there's a passport that people can get.
There's a National Park Service passport. That's correct.
Right.
It's a little booklet, and it has a, as you go to each park, you can get your passport stamped, and this becomes a souvenir and your own journal, really. of the different national park and historical properties within the National Park Service and cultural throughout the United States. So it's a wonderful souvenir that is a reminder of your travels and where you've been.
So if just as an idea, what does it cost like to be a member and then just go to the parks and get, you know, take care of the once you're, I guess, as you said, once you're a member, you're not paying an admission cost.
Well, if I don't member, there's many different passes. There's an accessibility
okay.
pass for individuals who are physically, emotionally challenged, who have a handicap. There's an annual pass that you can get if you are a regular at your local park. For example, we have a $10 annual pass that we sell, and that's good for the year, and it costs $10, and it's good for you and your family. So if you live near Minuteman and you wish to visit Minuteman several times a year, then you would be interested in annual pass. If you're going on a trip cross-country, you might be interested in the National Park Service pass, which will allow access to any of the national parks. And I just want to stress that it's for the waiving of the fee. This covers the fee, the entrance fee for the park. But if
right.
you want to go boating and there's a fee for boating or maybe a particular event or program, then if there's a fee associated with that, it does not cover that, but it covers the entrance fee to the park.
Okay. Then and just to give an idea, do you know, is there a set fee for this? Like if somebody's saying, I'm going to go traveling and pop into all the parks.
If they want to buy the National Park Service pass, it's
yes.
$50.
Oh, which is,
and then
that's
the,
cheap. You could.
Well, there's just shy of 400 parks in the National Park System, so yes.
Okay. So,
and some of
yeah.
those parks are free. For example, Independence
right.
National Historical Park is free. So, you know, they want to be mindful of where they're going, but it is a very good deal.
Sounds like it to me. So visiting Quincy, you can hit it on 4th of July for the really hot history, but I don't mean weather-wise, but but all year round, you could still get to see everything.
Yeah, in different phases. I mean, our park in particular, the historic homes are open April 19th through November 10th. So we're closed. The historic houses are closed from November 11th until April 18th during those cold winter months. And you'll find that in many historic houses just by the nature of the business. But I would suggest all of potential visitors check websites and call ahead of time just to verify whether it's the National Park Service or a private organization or a state-run historic property or park. Always, you know, check out the website first. If you don't have that opportunity, then call ahead of time because you never know. But our visitor center and our movie and our bookstore is open year-round. It's just reduced hours in the wintertime.
And a great, if you want another great souvenir, is the brochure that each park puts out.
That's right. There's a brochure at every park, and that includes general information about the site.
Mm-hmm. So you can do some inexpensive touring of the United
yep.
States.
Yes, and I would encourage all the listeners before they visit a national parks, check out the individual websites and
right.
get an idea of what the park has to offer, because not every park is going to offer a particular historic house tour. They may have a special event that day.
Right.
They may have special – we do focus tours where we will highlight a particular theme such as the servants or Henry Adams, the writer and historian. So a lot of times there's many activities, let's say a canoe trip, that they might not have been aware of, and they may want to look at how they're scheduling their time for these other activities.
Okay, great. Well, I appreciate your coming on the show and talking to us about this. Now I have more information to write when I do my article.
That's wonderful, and it was my pleasure to talk with you and your audience as well.
All right, have a great day. I know you're off someplace, huh?
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Well, yes, that it's the the building that you can go into, the first place that you want to visit in Quincy in terms of history, might be the Quincy Historical Society. There's a building, and it's not a lot of activity. It's a museum, so you get to see all these things, you know. Get the information, and that's where you can find out that about the birthplace of Howard Johnson's and Dunkin' Donuts as well. So, so I'm waiting for Jimmy to call in. Let's see. So, what I'm going to do is the time. Oh, I didn't even have a commercial before, so I might as well have one now. And, you know, I really shouldn't put this one on because I can't have any. Okay. All right, I'll listen to it anyway.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
Yeah, and you can get these delicious brownies, at least you can get these delicious brownies, at www.brownies.com. I have to lay off of them for a while, and we'll talk about that later. But in the meantime, we're still going to talk about food. Yes, we are, because I now have Jimmy on the line. Hi, Jimmy.
Hey, Merle. How are you?
Okay. Well, first, I want to chat about the Fuji Group itself.
Yes. Well, thank you. Well, first of all, I want to thank you for taking the time out to stop by, as well as doing this, as well as having me on the show. And it was a pleasure to meet you again. And I wanted to introduce the JP Fuji Group. The whole thing was started by my best friend and I, Peter C., when we were both 19 years old. We opened our first restaurant, and from there on, we started growing a little bit more and more and more, and now we have 6 restaurants under our portfolio, and we have 3 more coming up.
Wow. Where was the first restaurant?
The first restaurant was also was in the city of Quincy. We opened that back in 1998, when we were the first Japanese restaurant in the city of Quincy, in Massachusetts.
Oh.
Yes.
And is that still there?
I've actually had to sell my first location while I was planning the newer location. I went from a small 19-seater restaurant to a 112-seater restaurant, from a beer and wine to a full bar. So at the time, I didn't have enough management, and being a business owner, I didn't want the value of my business to take a hit if it was improperly managed. So instead of waiting for that to happen, because I had a lack of people, so I decided to sell it instead.
Okay. So where are the restaurants that you have?
Okay. So from that first place, I sold it, but then I stayed in Quincy. After that, when I opened up Fuji 1546, which was the one that you were at, and then after that, when I opened up B Cafe in North Quincy, and then Shabu Restaurant in North Quincy, back to Quincy Center with a Chinese, authentic Chinese concept, Bistro Chi, and also an American tapas concept, Kama Lounge. That's also in Quincy Center. And then after that, Fuji Kendall in Kendall Square, we're on 303rd Street. And the newer location upcoming is also, I have a Shabu location coming up again in on First Street in Kendall Square. And then I have a frozen yogurt place opening up
now,
back in North Quincy.
So people know what Kendall Square is.
Yes, Kendall Square is in Cambridge, Mass. It's the heart of technology. We're right by MIT, Tech Square, right over there.
Okay.
And then after that, we're opening up the frozen yogurt place in North Quincy, and after that, Somerville, Massachusetts, at a new development called Assembly Row. And
wow.
So that's everything that I have going on in my fire. So.
Wow. That's a lot, huh?
Well, but, I'm trying to do more, it's you have one chance, and I want to keep on doing this while I still can, because I think once I slow down, then I'll probably slow down.
Oh, okay. Well, as long as they're successful and you haven't had Gordon Ramsay visit any of them.
Well, so far, under my current business model, every single one of my properties has a managing partner there, and I also come to the restaurants once a day, and I meet with my managers every week. So, I believe I've put forth a good system where I can manage all the properties that's under my business.
Now, in terms of this, now, are you also choosing the executive chef at each restaurant?
I am handpicking each executive chef at each restaurant, and I also work with each executive chef for about 3 months after we open. So I work with them from start to finish. I actually develop all the menus, and I work with them through all the execution and get them up to speed. And usually they're ready within 2 to 3 months because most executive chefs, and I'm promoting within, and most executive chefs that run my businesses, they've been with me for a long, long time, and they've been training with myself or one of my students for a long, long time.
Oh, that's great. So, so in other words, you know ahead of time the type of food or
mm-hmm.
That you want, as well as are you like also knowing the recipes, or you just basically saying to each executive chef, this is the kind of food I want developed,
I develop all the recipes as well. Of course, some by myself and some with the help of my executive chefs. So it's a joint effort. I develop the menu, and then we go through all the recipes, and it's a team effort no matter how you look at it.
Now I'm curious, when you with the restaurant that you have the authentic Chinese food, what would I know that I don't think chow mein and egg rolls and
no, that although our menu has certain American Chinese foods, some of the authentic dishes that we do over there, for example, we have a mayonnaise walnut shrimp, and that's one of our most popular items. We also have a Chinese style fried chicken. You can order in whole or half or quarter, and that's extremely authentic. We also have black bean sauce with stir-fried clams, also authentic dish. We utilize a lot of different types of vegetables, such as the pea pod stems, baby bok choy, Shanghai bok choy, another veggie called tong ho, watercress. We use a lot of Asian vegetables, and we do stir fries with those. And that's just a sampling of what our authentic menus are. I mean, it's a good mix of current and old favorites.
Wow, that's great to know. I mean, other than that, I mean, there is a Chinatown in Boston.
Yes, there is.
Would you, and just so people understand, it doesn't mean that if you go to one Chinese restaurant, it has the same as another Chinese restaurant. It also depends on the cuisine or where it is. And like the one you have, what would you call that?
That would be more Cantonese style. I mean, China is such a big country. I mean, you know, they have foods from every region. You have the Sichuan, you have the Cantonese, you have the more northern style Mongolian. I mean, it's just a whole slew of different flavors in China. So, but I myself, my family, we're from the Guangdong area, Guangzhou. Another word for it is Cantonese. It just all means the same thing, but I'm from that area. So naturally, my inclination with food is to explore where my own family came from and go with that.
Oh, okay. So now let's get to the restaurant that I enjoyed. Let's talk about what I ate.
Well, thank you, Merle. I'm so glad and happy to hear that, you know, you utterly enjoyed it, it seems like. And I remember you had the fried squid, which it came with three different types of sauces. It was all homemade sauces. One of them was a spicy mayonnaise. Another one was a wasabi-based mayonnaise. And the other one was our homemade cocktail sauce. And the fried squid that's done with tempura flour, not your regular potato flour or starch, nothing like that. It's done with tempura flour.
Okay.
And then there was the salmon wonton chips that you utterly enjoyed.
yes.
That is a original Jimmy Lang creation, that is actually based off of our longest running best-selling sushi roll, which is the spicy tuna. So I took the salmon and I used kind of the same as the tuna recipe, except eating it in the sushi roll. Now you're eating it with fried crispy wonton chips. So it's kind of a sashimi, kind of an appetizer. So it's something different.
And it's salmon and tomatoes, chopped tomatoes.
Yep. Salmon, tomato, cilantro, a little bit. It's kind of like a salmon salsa, almost.
Right.
Right.
And by the way, for those people going there, yes, you can get a bag of chips to go. You can, yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then you also have the crunchies, which is a smoked salmon with cream cheese in the middle. And it's a sushi roll, but we also fry that a little bit, and we add the eel sauce right on top of it. So it's a sweet, crunchy, crunchy on the outside and soft on the inside. So that roll is also one of our best sellers.
Yeah, this is so. What we're talking about, just so my audience knows, we're now going to be speaking about the signature mahi rolls, and that was one of them. And yeah,
yep.
So let's continue while I get a napkin and wipe the drool from the side of my face. So.
Well, I'm glad you had such a good time, and I had a good time speaking with you and meeting the chickens that came along.
Yes.
Did they have a good time?
Oh, yes, they did. Yes, they They were great, but I'll tell you later what happened. But this, but in the meantime,
sure.
can we go through the talking
absolutely.
About those?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the next sushi roll you had was something called Little Shrimp Gift, and that's spicy salmon on the inside and shrimp, sweet shrimp from Maine. And that's on the outside. We sear that a little bit, and with that we add a little bit of teriyaki sauce on it and a little bit of spicy sauce. And these are all our signature rolls that I'm talking about. And then the next one you have, it's the Bundle of Joy, and that's actually a little different. The Bundle of Joy is not your traditional sushi roll. It's wrapped with rice paper, and it's the kind of rice paper that people make the fresh Vietnamese egg rolls with. And I use that. And on top of it, we have, and I'll take some tuna sashimi, sashimi grade tuna, and marinate it, stir fry it a little bit. And then I add some lettuce, some tabico, which is the flying fish roe, and some avocado to it. And then we roll that up, and that's also served over a eel sauce. And that's one of our signatures as well. And then Ming's Mango is actually named after my first student, Ming, who is also the head chef at two of my restaurants, and he's the one that trains a lot of the newcomers for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ming's Mango that has, well, mango and shrimp on the inside, and then it's a spicy tuna mix on the top of and on the outside of the sushi roll. And that's a spicy roll. And then you have the Maki Me Hungry. That one's also one of our signature dishes. And the sauces that we use for that, it's also a sweet sauce and a spicy sauce as well. And then you finish off with the homemade fried cheesecake. How did you like that?
That was quite interesting. I wanted to give you feedback on it, because one
sure.
of the things I wondered, okay, all right, so how's the cheesecake itself? That was good cheesecake, though.
Thank you. We make that ourselves. It's our own recipe, and because you know what, as chefs, sometimes when it's the downtime, you know, you want to experiment with food, and this was kind of an experiment. It was during one of the downtimes. Ming actually came up with it. We were all sitting around having some cheesecake, and he goes, "Oh man, I'm going to fry this. I'm going to see what this tastes like after it's fried." And so he went into the kitchen, took a piece of cheesecake that we made, and he dipped it into tempura batter, and he just threw it in the fryer later for 30 seconds, 40 seconds maybe, and he pulled it out and he added some chocolate sauce on and things like that. And I tried it. He tried it. Everybody tried it. And it was a nice accidental menu item. So I mean, it's pretty good. I think it's nice and hearty, but at the same time, it's not too heavy.
Yeah, and you can opt for even the fried ice cream too.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The fried ice cream that goes very well too. And then with the fried ice cream, we use a special breading, and we use the frozen ice cream. We put it into the breading, and then we have to refreeze it back, and then so that the core gets extremely hard, and then we throw in the fry later for again maybe 30, 40 seconds,
okay.
just to get it going again. Yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
Thank
really
you.
Cool.
Thank you. Thank you.
But then of course you have all the other type of sushi, etc., that any good sushi restaurant has.
Right.
Correct?
Right. And
yes.
Yep. And but, you know, the biggest thing about my restaurant is that we've continued to remain true to what sushi is supposed to be. I don't know if you've noticed, Merle, that out there, there's a lot of supersized sushi. And supersized sushi is, I don't want to say this, but I hope that it won't be the downfall of our trade. Just because lately, I've seen on certain blogs that, you know, some bloggers or foodies, they'll say that sushi is actually not that healthy for you. Well, of course it's not that healthy for you when you supersize everything. I mean, two things with supersized sushi. One, it doesn't take a whole lot of skill to make a giant sushi roll, but it does take a lot more skill to make smaller sushi rolls. That's one thing for sure. The other thing is, bigger size sushi rolls, yes, you may seem like you're getting a great deal, but what you're actually getting is a lot more rice and not that much filling on the inside. So with my restaurants, what I, you know, when I say that I try to remain to be true to what sushi is one piece, one bite, and it's about a balance of ingredients and not necessarily focusing on the bigness of the roll, I should say.
You're right. Well, you know, you're actually correct on that. I had noticed, you know, from starting to eat sushi, and then I go to restaurants and these things come out, and I go, I mean, the point with sushi, with maki rolls, anyway,
mm-hmm.
is it should be able to do it in one bite.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you for noticing that, because a lot of people out there, you know, that doesn't have the knowledge of sushi like you do, sometimes they'll complain to me that, well, I'm paying a lot and I'm not getting, you know, as good of a value as other people, you know, as other sushi places. Your sushi is way too small, you know, things like that. And I would address it with them the same way I would address it with anybody, which is, well, the way we do sushi is more authentic. We want to give you the good, well-balanced of ingredients of what sushi is really supposed to be. And most of the time when I explain this to people are okay with it, and they do understand, and then they start thinking about what I said, which is, well, if you have more rice, more carbs, it's less healthy for you. So that kind of defeats the purpose of what sushi is supposed to be.
Right. So I just want my audience to understand the difference between sushi and maki rolls. So sushi is basically something you're putting on top of a piece of rice.
Sushi, its literal meaning, it just means the su is vinegar, the shi is rice. So it just means vinegared rice. That's what sushi means. Maki rolls, maki means rolled sushi. So the nigiri, which is basically fish over a small piece of rice that's formed by your hand, and maki rolls are rolls. You use seaweed, and then you put rice on it, and you turn it into a roll. And then there's also sashimi. Sashimi, which is just the raw fish itself.
Right. Now, and I also want my audience to understand that when it comes to, I mean, sashimi is the only one that has to be raw. In other words,
right.
If you're getting
you're
a maki
right.
roll, or if you're getting nigiri, it doesn't have to be a piece of raw fish.
It does not. Right. Well, you're good at this. Well, you're very good at it.
Because that's what people say to me. Oh, and I go, oh, have you ever eaten a Japanese restaurant? They go, oh, I don't want to eat raw fish. And I go, no. And also, you don't even have to have fish, and you,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't also mean in a Japanese restaurant doesn't also mean that you're going to sit at the table while the chef stands there and flips the shrimp into your pocket.
Right, right. That's entirely something different. I'll tell you one thing. When I was younger, when I was about 19, 20 years old, when I first opened my first business, this mother and daughter came in. And the mother is an avid sushi eater, but her daughter does not eat sushi at all. And that's what she told me. And so I said, okay, well, do you mind if I speak to your daughter? And she said, oh, absolutely. You know, I don't think you'll be able to get her to eat anything because nobody can. Even sometimes I try to, you know, tell her about certain foods, but she just eats what she eats, and she likes what she likes. And I said, well, if you would give me this opportunity to see if I can, get her to eat a little bit of sushi. That would be great. And she said, by all means, good luck with that. You know, and then she kind of laughed at me for even wanting to attempt. So I walked over there and I said, how are you? And the little girl was about 8 years old. And I said, do you mind telling me some of your favorite foods? And she says, well, I like pizza. I like tuna fish, she said. And that was my end right there. So I looked at her and I said, well, if I made you something with tuna fish, will you promise me that you'll just try one piece? And if you don't like it, you can spit it out, you can throw it away, and you can yell at me if you want. How about that? And she goes, well, if it's tuna fish, then, yeah, I'm willing to give it a try. I said, okay, perfect. So I went back to the sushi bar. I took some raw tuna fish. I cooked it. And then I proceeded to make it into a tuna fish sandwich consistency. So I added a little bit of mayo, but I also added I added some tabico in it. I added some cucumbers in it to give it more of a crunch. And when I made that into a sushi roll and I served it to her, she was absolutely in heaven with it. Her mother could not thank me more, because they eventually became regular customers and they come back all the time. I still see them after all these years. That little girl is now 21, 22, 23 years old. And she's become a sushi eater for life now.
Okay. You know, I got to tell you what I started, you know, like the typical American eating a can of tuna, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing, at one point, I had a piece of fresh tuna.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had a piece of fresh tuna, I said, oh, I'm not eating this stuff out of a can anymore. And so I would do that.
Oh,
then,
you can't do that anymore.
Wait. Oh, but actually, no. If you buy the correct cans of tuna, it's not that bad, because like the problem with canned tuna is it may say like tuna and water, and then you got to read what the ingredients really are, because it's more than water.
Yeah.
You know, so what happened, except if you get certain brands. But anyway, so then what happened is I would never think of having raw tuna. I said, okay, I'm going to try it. Then once I try the raw tuna, I'm going, there's no fish taste at all. I'm going, you know, this is really good. Well, now I can't even, you can't cook tuna for me.
Right.
Because it has, and I don't like, you know, like there's sometimes like to sear it on the outside, you know, it's raw on the inside. It still kills it. Because once you sear it, it's now fish. I'm getting taste of fish.
Right,
as opposed
right.
To tuna. And it's hard to explain what raw tuna tastes like to
isn't
somebody.
Isn't that funny how when raw tuna can be so much different than what cooked tuna is? And then, the taste, the texture, you can't even tell it's the same product.
Yes. And you don't even get you're eating fish.
No, that's right. You're absolutely right about that. Fresh fish should not taste, should not smell like fish. It has its own distinct smell and flavor, but it should not smell like fish.
Yes, that's definite. That's true.
Yep.
So that's how I got hooked into that. And I guess probably from eating lox. That's probably why I was like to having raw salmon. It was like close to the, you know, close enough to the consistency.
Yep.
Just a different
taste. Love lox myself. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
A little bit of smoked salmon, a little bit of capers, a little bit of tomatoes over bagels.
A little onion.
Little onion. Oh, gosh.
Some
you're making my mouth water here. I haven't even had lunch, Ma.
So I just want to, because I have somebody coming on soon. I just wanted to tell you quickly, like, what happened. What was that at the hotel? I brought the leftovers, put them in the refrigerator.
Uh-huh.
And I won't go through the whole thing, but basically, let's just call it a security breach. And my refrigerator was cleaned out before I checked out. And I went, Wait a minute. That means my leftover sushi was thrown out.
Gone.
I was
oh,
going to have
God.
That. You know, so
oh, I'm
anyway.
So sorry.
So I don't know. We may have the Adams Inn pay for my next meal of your sushi.
Sounds good.
I understand a certain human being makes trips into New York City.
Come on by. Come on by.
Yeah.
It would be great. It would be great.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Jimmy. What's the website? Should people just go to Fuji Group?
Well, Merle, first of all, thank you very much for having me on the show again. You are more than a gracious hostess and MC and DJ. And it was utterly a great experience sitting down with you while you were at the restaurant. And the website is Fuji1546.com. And on that website, it'll have links to my other restaurants as well.
Okay. Fabulous.
Again, it's www.fuji1546.com.
Okay. Great.
Thank you
Thanks
very
a
much,
bunch, Mel. Jimmy.
All right. Talk soon. Have
okay.
a good day.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. I am like, okay. So now my mouth is watering, and what can I do? All right. So now that I talked about this, that I'm not going to have anymore. All right. We're now going to talk about what my new food regimen is going to be like. So let's put you on there. Okay. Hello,
Hello.
Mike.
How are you?
How are you
How
doing?
How are you today? Good. How are you doing?
Okay. Well, I just wanted to share, by the way. I got up very late. Sometimes I do that. So I didn't. I just had breakfast like at around and noon or something like that. Whatever. Okay. So I said, okay, so let's try something. And I had, we'll get into it in a little while about the packaging, but it's just like I went, whatever, this is a breakfast item. And I just grabbed the package. And like, to me, it was like, it doesn't matter. Taste-wise, it'll matter, but it doesn't really matter. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like,
right.
Is it going to be good or not good? You know, that's what I was looking at. So I took it, and by the way, and I don't have a microwave. We'll get into that in a minute. But I heated it up, and I was sitting there eating this, and I had an omelet. I guess it was, Someone was in this spicy.
We have a Western omelet, and we have a cheddar omelet.
That's okay. So it was the cheddar omelet that I had, and it has jalapenos in it.
No, that's the Western omelet.
Oh, okay. So that's what I had—the Western omelet. Okay.
Yeah.
And that with the sausage patty, maple.
Mm-hmm. The maple sausage, right?
The maple sausage. Okay. So that's what I had, and I just wanted to share that. that's what
Good.
I had so far. Okay.
So have you lost 50 pounds in the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, right.
good. Right. Just another
so
one of
I
our success
start,
stories.
We want to start off by talking about diet regimen itself and, you know, what it's about.
Right. You want me to talk about it or do you want to talk?
No.
Are we on
I want
the air?
To...
Are we on the air? Are we on the air right now?
Yeah, we're on the air.
Well, I didn't know that. Okay.
Well,
that's okay. I do these sometimes, and everyone does them differently, so that's fine. You know what really sets us apart, Merle, personal trainer food from Nutrisystems, Jenny Craig, and all these others, is that, first of all, we try to be as straightforward and as honest as we can, that you can't eat pancakes and brownies and add your points up and lose much weight for a long time. You may do it for a few days, but you're going to give up. And most of the diet food companies know this, and they count on it because they know you're going to come back next year. And what really sets us apart is we just tell customers, look, you know, we're overweight because of just some bad habits. It's not because we're lazy. It's not because we choose to be. Everyone wants to feel better and to look better, but they're just confused. And so what we tell everyone is you've got to go back and eat the way we did 40 or 50 years ago before all the garbage was out there. Just go back to eating natural foods like meats, vegetables, eggs, cheeses. And I always tell everyone, and your smokers that are out there or ex-smokers can relate to this, is that if you were to tell a smoker, look, when you stop smoking, you're allowed to have one cigarette every week or one cigarette every month. An experienced smoker would laugh at you and say, no, I can't. I can never go back to that because if I do, I'll be smoking two packs within 2 days. Okay, my father has smoked for 60 years, and that's just the way it is. So same thing with eating and losing weight. Once you start losing weight and you're learning to eat meats and vegetables and back to the natural way, then and you get down to your ideal weight, then every once in a while you can have a piece of cake or pizza or a hamburger. But while you're trying to lose weight, you can't. And so that's all we do is we just give you great-tasting food that's very convenient that you throw in a microwave for 60 to 90 seconds, and it's all natural. It's just meats and vegetables. There's none of the processed starches like rices, noodles, gravies that a lot of the other companies sell you. And so what do you think of the food so far?
Well, that's all I've had was that. That's I got it yesterday. I said, I'm going to start today because I was busy. So, and by the way, you said, you know, I need to make sure I get at least 2 minutes of walking a day if I don't walk at all.
That's
you know?
Right.
And I spent at least 10 minutes of walking going back and forth from the living room to the kitchen and emptying the box because I would say, okay, oh God, that's enough for now. I'm gonna go back, and I would go back. Okay, that's enough for now. And then finally, it got to a point. It was like a long thing. And then finally, because I also am going. Okay, so where exactly am I gonna put this and whatever? And then I had to call because I wanted to find out what has to be frozen. You know, because I already assumed. Like the vegetables, you don't want to keep them thawed out in the refrigerator, you know, and because you're not, then you're not getting consistency,
right.
You know, kind of thing.
Right.
And you and I got, I would imagine you don't want to do it with the same thing with the breakfast foods.
Well, what we tell everyone, because the food's pre-cooked and frozen. And there's hardly any preservatives in the food, but because it's pre-cooked and frozen, you can put, you know, a few meals in your refrigerator and they'll be fine. We don't recommend putting the vegetables in there, Merle, because they do get soggy because of the moisture that comes out of the vegetables. But the breakfast and the meats, you can put 4 or 5 in your refrigerator and heat them up over the next 3 or 4 days and they'll be completely fine. They'll be very safe. So you just started today.
Then let me ask you about in terms of the meats, because what I wound up doing is saying, and the snacks you can throw in the refrigerator. That doesn't really.
Right.
I mean, you don't
have
to keep them frozen.
No.
And we'll go into what they are in a minute, but I just, but from what I got as far as what I did with all of the meats is I put them in the refrigerator in a bin to keep them. Mm-hmm. Now, is that okay?
In the refrigerator or in the freezer?
In the refrigerator.
Okay, you put all the meats in the refrigerator, 56 meats in the refrigerator.
Right, in the bin.
Okay.
In a bin.
Yeah, I would say put half of them in your refrigerator, the other half in the freezer. We recommend not putting more than 14 days worth of food, which is 28 meats. In your refrigerator, and they'll be fine up to 14 to 20 days. But I would put the other half of the meats in your freezer. And when you and I originally talked, I tried to warn you, you get a lot of food. It's almost 55 pounds worth of food. And you said, oh, I've got another freezer somewhere or whatever. So, but it's a lot of food. It takes up a lot of space.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Oh, but when I spoke to, oh, okay, never mind. I was told that it's no problem. Oh, it's cooked and you can keep it in the you know. Because when I notice that, for instance, and I'm saying that because, like, when I put it in the bin, it's, I guess if you want to call the crisper, when I put vegetables in this bin, it's like it lasts a long, long time.
Right.
You mean
raw vegetables?
Yeah, raw vegetables.
Yes. Yes, see, pre-cooked vegetables, they have what they call...
I'm not talking about the vegetables. So I'm talking about in terms of the meat that I would imagine that, you know, instead of putting them just sitting on a shelf in the refrigerator.
In
a crisper, it's going to stay fresher.
Right. Oh, it will. It definitely will.
Okay.
Yeah, no question, Merle.
And then I guess I should ask then, well, then, if they thawed out, I can't refreeze them.
No, you can. Because they're pre-cooked, you can refreeze them. It won't hurt you. Yeah.
Okay. So what I should do is take some and put them in the freezer.
I would say half of them, half to three-fourths will be okay in your refrigerator. But I would put, you know, a fourth to half of them in the freezer.
Okay, then what I could do is substitute, because I have all of the breakfasts in the freezer. Mm-hmm. So take it like about 2 weeks, you say, or 1 week or 2 weeks
worth? Yeah, I would take 2 weeks of breakfast. So take 14 breakfasts out and put them in
the refrigerator.
Yeah. Put them in the refrigerator.
What I'll do is I'll substitute the spot that I had it. I have this all set up so nicely.
Great.
Because the way I have this set up, what I'm going to be doing is I'm not going to say, oh, I'll have this today. I'm probably just going to grab a bag. Oh, this is a meat.
And
I'll probably only notice a difference right away without reading the bag whether I'm taking out something that's chicken or beef.
that's
basically
right.
What it is. And then just grab a vegetable. Okay.
Right.
So now let's get what I want to ask you, because people are going to want to know. So now you have this. Are you expected to go out and buy anything else? Okay. So
you can, but you don't have to.
Other than liquid. That this should be filling enough for each meal, snack, or whatever for a
day. Yes. We're running our first men's test group, Merle. These are big guys. They're 8 men, everywhere from 220 up to 340 pounds, and they're doing the program. And what we recommend is to fast for 24 hours. And when you fast for 24 hours, it does several things for you. The first thing it does is it really helps your stomach shrink, but it also cleanses your body because you're just drinking liquids, water. You can drink coffee, diet sodas, Crystal Light. But basically what will happen is when you get the toxins cleaned out of your body, you'll go through sugar withdrawals faster. Your stomach will shrink, and then all of a sudden the food that you've got there, these guys have been on it, and they haven't been hungry at all. They've lost between 16 and 24 pounds in their first 2 weeks. The results have been phenomenal. And so, yeah, it's plenty of food. We tell folks if you want to add a salad, you can add a salad, but we give you meats and vegetables, and we give you plenty of food, which you're about to discover is enough food. We give you more food than any other weight loss meal program in the United States. NutriSystems gives you about 33 pounds. We give you about 55 pounds. And their food's not real. Ours is. So, yes, we give you a very, very complete plan.
Well, I can attest to the weight, because the FedEx guy came to my house, and he looked like he was having a little bit difficulty bringing up the stairs. And then I said, oh, can you, like, because I just want him to at least get it into the alcove. I figured, okay, then I could, like, open it up and take things in a little at a time. And he said, where do you want it? And I asked him if it's possible to just put it in my kitchen. And we, you know, went through, and he put it down in the kitchen, and I thought, boy, I don't know how heavy this is, because he looked like he...
he was struggling, right.
Yeah, and
yeah,
I
they're
said,
heavy.
And I tried to move the box with my hands after, and I went, oh, I can't even move this box.
Right. Yeah, it's a lot of food. A lot. We give you a lot of food. And what we have found, Merle, especially for busy females, is that if it's not complete, if you have to go to the store and buy additional food, chances are you won't because you don't have the time. And so that's why we try to give so much food so that you don't have to go and buy anything else.
Okay, so I want people to understand what this is you're getting. You're not getting like the little package boxes kind of thing, you know,
right.
Like the, when you buy frozen food and whatever. Everything is in a plastic bag.
Yeah,
so,
it's individually packaged meats and vegetables so that
right.
when you order food, you select the meats and the vegetables that you want to eat. So that our goal is every time that you sit down at a table for a meal, you're going to eat one meat and one vegetable. And that's where the magic of our program is. Instead of a TV dinner that forces you to eat Brussels sprouts and liver, we tell you just eat a meat and a vegetable, whatever you want to eat, but without all the rice, all the pizza and the chocolate that these other companies tell you that you can eat. It has to be natural whole food.
Okay. By the way, I'm researching. I'm still trying to get an answer. If something is gluten-free,
mm-hmm.
is that okay?
Yeah. You got to remember, too, Merle, in our industry, gluten-free, there's a difference, and the federal government is very strict on classification. So if a company calls something gluten-free, it means that if it's manufactured, it's got to be in a very strict manufacturing atmosphere that doesn't have certain airborne allergens within X per million. I mean, it's a real strict deal. But you also have what you call food that has no gluten, which is a looser term. And so, you know, what we tell everyone is if you've got a really bad allergy and you'll respond to gluten and it could be fatal, then you really need to avoid any prepared food just because it can be very, very dangerous. But we just tell people 98% of our food has no gluten in it. It's just meats and vegetables. And a lot of the diet companies out there and a lot of the food companies, they'll sell you a cake mix from Betty Crocker that's gluten-free. And a lot of consumers eat that thinking, well, if it's gluten-free, it's healthy. And that's not true. And that's the problem in the diet and the fitness industry is the way they package and sell these things. And I'll give you a great example is I was at the store the other day with my daughters, and I saw a new Special K calorie pack treat that they had. And they showed a slender girl with a measuring tape around her waist, and it literally looked like a brownie with cream in the middle of it. It looked like a chocolate Twinkie. And they were promoting it as their new whatever they want to call it, and it's less than X number of calories. And these food companies market and package these things to fool consumers to think, oh, they look healthy. There's a pretty girl on there who looks pretty and sexy, so it's okay for me to eat. And it's not.
I wouldn't eat it because I could. It's like I turned a package and I'll look and see, so how many things are in this
right.
that are not
sure.
real, that
right.
I don't have in my refrigerator.
Right, that's right.
Or my spice rack every day kind of thing, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's how I do that, yeah.
So yeah.
The reason I'm asking about that is that I understand, like, the worst thing to have regardless, white rice is, like, no, not good for you anyway.
That's right.
Is there any rice that's okay? Any type of rice?
When you're trying to lose weight, no. It's just like, is fruit okay? When you're trying to lose weight, when you're trying to reduce your what we call your glycogen levels, no. Fructose is not good because it stimulates the liver. Rice, any type of whole grain. When you're trying to keep your body in fat burn mode, you need to avoid those things. If you don't, and remember, we've been told this for 35 years, that it's okay to have those things. And Merle, you can go to the USDA or the World Health Organization's website, and everyone knows obesity has increased by about 800% in the last 40 years. So, no, you can't have rice. Not while you're trying to lose weight. After you've lost weight, you can.
No, what I'm asking, there's a particular company, which I'm still trying to get an answer from them, because I left a message, called Lotus Foods. And mm-hmm. they have various, I don't think you can get, like, a normal white rice from them.
right.
I mean, the about the whitest of the, if you want to call it, is a brown rice, is a jasmine brown rice. That's about
right.
the end of that. But they have things called, like, forbidden rice. And it's a black rice. I have to call it short grain black rice that's,
right.
like, kind of crunchy.
Sure.
And
now, are you asking me because you want to eat rice?
No,
I'm curious because the
particular rice that they have is extremely healthy for you. That's why, and I'm
now
just
how's
trying
it healthy
to see,
for you?
Hmm?
How is it healthy for you, Merle?
That's what I'm trying to get from them. I got this whole thing about the rice, their rice in particular that they're growing.
Right.
I don't know if all of them, but I'm not sure. So I'm trying to get in touch with them because I'm
right.
curious about of people that are not, like, doing a diet and they're not supposed to have rice, if they should cut their rice out as well. Or is
yeah.
there, or they'd say, no, this particular rice is something that's not blah, 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 blah. That's what I'm trying to find out.
May I say something about rice
sure.
and the history of rice? Okay.
Yes.
First of all, you know, once you get down to your ideal weight, and this is what we tell people, once you get down to your ideal weight and you're feeling good
mm-hmm.
and you like the size that you're at, you can have rice every other day. You can eat a piece of pizza once or twice a week. You can eat a cheeseburger once or twice a week. But like I tell folks, when I'm 50 years old, when I grew up, we didn't have four Cokes a day. We didn't have fast food stores on every corner. We got a dessert if Mom made one. We couldn't go to the store and buy 100 different pre-made frozen desserts that we could nuke in a microwave. And so rice is one of those things that has been part of the fiber marketing mania that started about 25 years ago. And what happened, I was speaking at a hospital a couple of years ago to a large group of doctors, is they were talking about fiber. And I told these guys, I said, look, fiber, when I grew up in the 60s, no one knew what fiber was. We didn't know what a calorie was. We didn't know what a fat gram was. We just ate normal old-fashioned food. But rice kind of got thrown in here as one of the healthy alternatives because of all the fiber, and a lot of people started pointing their finger at the Japanese. And the truth is that after we bombed the Japanese in World War II, they had basically nothing. So the only thing they could really, the only commodity that they had available to them was rice. So they started eating a lot of rice along with their fish and their other vegetables. And so a lot of experts in the 70s interpreted this as one of their keys to health was their rice, and it wasn't. The key to their health was, A, they were working all the time out in rice fields, working 16 hours a day, but they were also eating just meats and vegetables. And so there are a lot of foods, fruit being one of them, that we've been told, and I'll give you a great example, is bananas. We've been told that bananas are very healthy for you. Bananas are not good for you. They're very unhealthy. They'll make you fat as a cow. And there are tribes over in South America and Africa hundreds of years ago that used to get their women up to 500 pounds by eating whole grain breads, eating bananas, and drinking milk. Not eating red meat or not eating bacon, but eating a lot of the things that we're told today are very healthy. So we have a lot of confusion out there right now among all of the consumers, and that's what we try to teach people is not only do we give you food, but we try to teach you that you've got to eat natural whole foods. And I'm not talking about organic, range-fed, exotic, expensive foods. I'm talking about meats and vegetables. And so, you know, that's the battle we face every day. but we have seen phenomenal results. We have people that lose, 25 pounds in a month, and they're not starving and they're not doing killer workouts. They're walking 5 to 10 minutes a day, and they're eating natural foods until they're full. But rice is one of those items that you have to avoid because it will build up what we call glycogen levels in your liver, and it will stall fat burn. I'm sorry, I'm very passionate about this, and I can ramble on.
No, that's okay. I'm just, as I said, I'm trying to find out this whole thing of what makes, I mean, if you see their website, you're probably looking at rice like things I never heard of. I've never heard of these kind of rice that they're growing, And you could even, get organic, not organic. You can, but it's just like I tried like many of these rice, and it actually started because I was at a restaurant that had this forbidden rice, and I went, I don't know what that is. And when I tasted it, I said, this is really, really good, really delicious,
sure.
And it's not, it's a whole grain. So you're not,
right.
And so what happened, I wound up getting in touch with the company because I was really, very curious about the varieties that they had. But I'm just trying to find out, if any of the particular rice, for any reason, they could say, no, it's still rice. Or, this is better for you because you're having the whole grain as opposed to, but if you're not supposed to have rice, none of our rice is okay. Yeah, that's what I just want to, I'm just curious about, about that. That's all.
I'm looking at the forbidden rice nutritional label right now, and
right.
They've got 43 grams of carbs per third, a third of a cup is 43 grams of carbs and 3 grams of fiber. It's a high carb. It's not just a carb. It's a very high carb. And but again, once you've gotten down to your ideal weight, Merle, then you can have rice every other day.
I'm just saying. So in other words, in looking at the product, that's what I'm looking at. That in terms of complex carbs that I'm not having. And
You are having complex carbs through your vegetables.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in terms of, obviously no flour, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, but that kind of stuff, the things that turn into sugar.
Which rice does.
Right. So that's what I was looking at in terms
right.
of, so if you're looking at the amount of carbs that's in that rice, you're assuming it'll turn into sugar?
I'm not assuming it does turn into sugar.
That's why I'm asking about that.
Here's the litmus test. Find any type 1 diabetic, not type 2, but type 1 that you know, and ask them how much whole wheat rice they eat. And I tell everyone this, type 1 diabetics, because their pancreas is dead. If they eat anything, whether they think it's healthy or not, their body's going to tell them. They'll either die or have to take insulin. And so ask a type 1 diabetic if they eat a lot of organic rice, and I promise you their answer is going to be, heck no, I don't. My glucose will go through the roof and I'll die.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
So that's the question I got answered, that it doesn't, I mean, I'm happy that they have all these kinds of rice that are quality, that are different, that are, in terms of fiber or things like that. But what I'm now getting is it doesn't matter in regards to what I'm doing. I still can't have it anyway.
Not right now. If you're trying to lose weight. That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. That's all I wanted to get on this whole thing.
Okay.
Now, so tell people what kind of plans, the type of diet plans.
We have four four different meal programs, Merle. One is a breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snack that includes everything. I mean everything, tons of food. The next one is a breakfast, lunch, dinner that doesn't have snacks because a lot of our folks, they're just not snackers. And then we have a third program, which is a lunch and dinner. And the reason we have a lunch and dinner is that after someone's been on our program for about 2 months, oftentimes they'll start making their own breakfasts, and they'll just want the lunch and dinner portion of it. And then our last one is the protein plan, which gives you 156 meats and eggs, and you get to select all whatever you want. And that's the one that we have. We've got over 2,700 trainers now that sell our food for us. And that's the one a lot of our trainers will put their customers on if they want to see really fast results because it's just so much protein and hardly any complex carbs. But we have those four programs that we sell right now, and we're launching a men's program with Dr. Jeff Life, who's the 74-year-old guy that's very ripped. And we're launching that in August, so we're real excited about this. So that'll give us our fifth meal program. And they're all 28-day meal programs.
Yeah.
28 days of food.
Okay. So when you do that, like, you're expected then on your own to, you can't just have protein all day. I mean, you're expected to go out and buy your own vegetables or not?
No, on the protein plan, because you're eating between four and five proteins a day, you can live on protein. And that's another misconception. And what we tell everyone is that if you do the protein plan, add a salad to it if you want to. But we have a lot of guys who don't want to add a salad, that they want to burn fat as fast as they can. And matter of fact, on our men's program, what they're going to be getting is they get four meats or four proteins and one vegetable per day. And as I told you, the all eight gentlemen have lost just phenomenal amounts of weight, and they're never hungry. They're sleeping better. They have more energy. And some of them will add a salad. Some of them don't add a salad. But it's really, if you're going to do the protein plan, what we recommend to people is either get a trainer or talk to your doctor just to make sure that it's okay if you're eating all protein. But it's natural protein. It's not protein powder. And that's the big difference, is that it's natural food.
Okay. Would I be expected, because I have this way, to be losing weight? Like, in other words, it's going to take a longer time?
Well, if you are walking every day, and I know you've got, is it a hip problem?
Yes.
Okay. With your hip problem, and if you follow our program, and Merle, I'll tell you, here's the one thing that I learned with my wife. When I helped my wife lose 55 pounds in 5 months, okay, was that a woman has been taught, and this is what we were talking about earlier, a woman has been told or taught that you can eat two or three healthy meals a day, and at the end of the day, if you've been under X number of calories, then you can party like a rock star and eat a piece of chocolate cake and drink a glass of wine. And you can do that, but the problem is you're not going to lose any weight and you're not going to burn fat, because the body does not work that way. So it really depends. If you follow our program to a T and you walk for 5 to 10 minutes a day, you'll see amazing results. I mean, 5 to 6 pounds a week is very normal on our program if you follow it. But we find even a lot of our customers, they'll say, well, I ate my meals and then I was out with my girlfriends and I just had to have that piece of pie. And then they end up doing that four times a week, and they call us and say, well, why haven't I lost weight? But that's what you've been told when you see the commercials of Jennifer Hudson at Weight Watchers saying you can eat chocolate and you can have this. And of course, we believe them.
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know, we try to educate. And just to say, look, we're just trying to be truthful and honest, because my big fear is I've got three daughters, and, you know, the American Journal of Medicine came out in 2003, and they made this very shocking statement, and they said children that are born after the year 2000 in the United States will be the first generation in our country who will likely not outlive their parents. And I think they said 30% of them will likely not outlive their parents due to the complications of obesity. And if you think about that, and I don't know if you have children, but if one of my girls died before I did, you know, it's just a sad state where we've gotten to. So we're just trying to be honest and help educate people and do the right thing.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll find out. What I'll do, we're going to have a conversation again in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
To see what's happening. I'm going to be blogging this as well.
Are you going to follow it to a T, Merle?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to follow it to a T and blog this, and I'll be commenting, you know, like today. You say, you know, I had this for breakfast. I was full, and it tasted great. I mean, it didn't have a funny taste. I did Nutrisystem. It was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even want to go into. I mean,
I know.
You know, I mean, I don't have cardboard. I don't, you know, that's the whole point. I'm a gourmet cook. You know, like it.
Yeah.
And one of the things I had commented, I was talking to one of my friends and about the fact that, you know, I'm cutting out sugar. She says to me, I can't do that. And I said, well, the best way to do it is if I don't have it in my house, there's nothing I can do about it. I mean,
that's right.
What I mean? And that's what it is. I'm not a big snacker at all. So if I have something, like if you want to call it sugar, my downfall, if you want to call it, especially right now, is going to be the most difficult thing, is to not have ice cream. That's the downfall.
Really?
That's it.
Wow.
I don't keep anything in the house. There's nothing.
Right.
And the reason is there's nothing interesting enough or tasty enough for me to eat that has sugar. It's like you'll never find cake. The reason you'll never find cake is because if I want a chocolate cake, I don't want the cake. I want a chocolate bar. Don't give me a milk chocolate bar. It's got to be a dark chocolate bar. So and that's what happens in terms of the way I eat, because I don't want anything artificial, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh my God, I can't have this because they put palm oil with the chocolate, and all I taste is the palm oil. I just wanted the damn chocolate. I mean, this is what happens. My palate does this. And I want to share something interesting that had happened. Also, I just came back from a press trip, and I went to this place. It's Blueberry Farm. And they have some, you know, they make jams. And the woman told me they have three types with the blueberries. One is for diabetics, and they only use apple juice to sweeten it. And and then they have two that they make, one with a lot less sugar. And I said, that'll be interesting, because to me, I'm thinking, if you're having ripe blueberries, they should be sweet enough to not have to add that much sugar, you know.
Right.
So I tasted the one with the less sugar, and I went, this really tastes great. Doesn't bother me. I tasted the one with the regular one, and it really bothered the back of my throat.
Mm.
The
wow.
amount. And I said, I can't. This is. Wow, I don't understand how people eat it. But then I realized it's the same thing that bothers me if I have milk chocolate, because I think the sugar contents must not agree with whatever taste buds in the back of the throat, because it's more annoying to have something like that. So even in, you know. But I thought that was that. I didn't even realize how much I've cutting down on sugar.
Right.
Until I had that and said, this is really sweet. And yet, you know, the other person with me said, no, this is normal. This is the way it's supposed to taste. It's the way people eat it. And I'm going, how can they? This is horrible.
Right, that's right. Everything has sugar in it now, Merle. Everything.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, when you and I were growing up, we didn't get all the Pop-Tarts and all the stuff that they have. And I've got three girls, and so I see what their friends eat, and it is everything has sugar, everything. And so,
I'm going to tell you how I grew up, which is why I'm surprisingly. I mean, like, the breakfast was if I was eating dry cereal, that dry cereal, it didn't even matter if it was a dry cereal that it had sugar. I poured the sugar in there anyway.
Right. Sure.
And then,
absolutely.
And then if I had French toast, I had sugar, and I had to put enough layer of sugar. I like watching it melt.
That's right.
That's
I love
how much
French
sugar
toast.
That I had with French toast. Then if
right.
I had pancakes, the pancakes could not be dry at all. It's soaked in pancake syrup.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But then, of course, my parents wanted to know why I couldn't sit still.
How funny. That is hilarious.
I was like, I couldn't sit in the house. I was done. I'm out of the house. I'm active. I'm doing something.
Yes, ma'am.
Whatever, you know.
That's right. It does. It gets you going. It gets you going.
But it's funny. And if you said, you know, like, why can't you sit still? I go, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know why. Of course, if we didn't have that, then there's also the bagels. Now, the bagels, if you're having bread, it's still turning into sugar. So everything
that's right.
that I had for breakfast either was sugar or turned into sugar. Yeah.
That's right.
But one thing that helped me in terms of that is that I tasted real maple syrup, and I went, ugh, what was the crap I've been eating before?
Yeah.
Now it started to be, now if I like went out, if a place does not have pure maple syrup, I will not have pancakes or French toast.
That's right.
Never mind. You know, because it's that real, that's what I wanted. It's the maple syrup I wanted to have on that, to have that flavor. So that that helped change my palate as well. To realize that I wasn't getting pure maple syrup, and what was really in there, I went, ugh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's amazing, all the processed ingredients that they're putting in everything. Just amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so we'll talk in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
And you could, you know, watch the blog. This will be interesting. I probably should have a snack, huh? Now that since I had breakfast.
There you go.
As
Great.
Opposed to like going, see, what happens is I don't get hungry. I love, I like the taste of food. And I don't get hungry. So I have to go, all right, you can't do that. You have to say, okay, you know, have a snack.
It's time to eat, right,
yeah,
right.
It's time to eat, okay. Anyway, okay, we'll talk soon.
Okay, Merle.
And thank you for sharing. And the website is?
www.personaltrainerfood.com.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
Yes.
All right, thank you, Merle. Good luck.
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to go have my snack. And I got a lot more shows I'm going to be doing on Quincy, Massachusetts. So everybody have a great day. All the chickens are it's not that they're resting. Marilyn and Minerva went with me to the Poconos while Esther and Eunice stayed home with their new adopted daughter. Yes, their new adopted daughter, Ethel May. And so they're just catching up on how the trip was, and so that's why they haven't popped in here. So everybody, I know. Gotta keep a sense of humor. Have a great day, evening, or whatever, and have that brownie for me, please.